I'm Laura Vinroot Poole, and this is What We Wore. I had the privilege of having a conversation with Anna Sui, one of the original independent designers who's conquered every category from ready-to-wear to beauty to fragrance. But in spite of the seemingly strategic way her business has unfolded over the past 40 years, she assures me that there was never a master plan. Where are you from?
I was born in Detroit, Michigan. My parents are from China.
How did y'all get to Detroit?
My parents both were educated in France, and they actually met when they were living in France. They were students. My mother was at the Sorbonne, and my father was at the famous engineering school for bridges. And they met on a student trip when they were traveling in Spain.
Wow.
And they fell in love there. My older brother was born in Paris. And then my father got accepted to the University of Michigan. He got his master's degree at the University of Michigan and got hired by a Detroit architectural firm, Smith Hinchman & Grill. And that's where he spent his whole career.
Detroit, especially at that time, was spectacular. What was it like?
I grew up in the suburbs. So it was just kind of like pop culture America, you know, with, you know, cartoons and Barbie dolls. And, you know, it was just very, very pop culture. And, you know, of course, Detroit was very, very rich at that point. We had like great shopping, great boutiques and department stores. And we also had great music because at that point, like all the bands were passing through Detroit because there was like a circuit that they would all do, like New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago.
Were there many Chinese immigrants, or did you recognize that as being different?
No, not at all, because the Exclusion Act was still on. So no, there weren't very many Chinese. The only other Chinese families we knew were from my father's fraternity from University of Michigan. And so we would meet with them every couple of months. There would be like a dinner or if it was a holiday. And then there were a few that started moving into our community, but not nearby. So mostly it was the fraternity. And then there were people that my dad worked with, because the architectural firm, the owner really liked Chinese and he hired a lot of Chinese. So they became like my parents' friends. And, you know, we all lived within communities in the area. So again, there would be parties and dinners and, you know, like probably like once a season, my parents would have everybody over, or we would go over somebody else's house.
Did your parents ever go back, or did you have communication with your grandparents?
My grandfather, my mom's dad, represented Taiwan at the UN. So he would come in for every General Assembly. And we had quite a few relatives that lived in New York and some in California. So we would see everybody like maybe in the summer, or they would come at Christmas time. My dad's family was based in Hong Kong. And I didn't meet my grandfather until I started working and traveling to Hong Kong.
Wow.
And then I would see him every time I went.
And what was that like?
He didn't speak English. So it was always, you know, like a big family gathering in a Chinese restaurant with dim sum or dinner. And so I at least I got to spend time with him.
You had a real formative experience when you were 4 years old. You went to New York for the first time.
Yeah, it was my uncle, my mom's brother, my Uncle Fred. It was his wedding and I was the flower girl. And I just remember like loving New York. And by the time I went back to Michigan, I said to my parents, when I grow up, I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to be a fashion designer. Not really understanding what that meant, but that was my goal.
Did anybody in your family help you understand what that could mean? I mean, how did you know that that was a real thing that one could do?
I didn't. I had to figure it out. I mean, my mom did home sewing, you know, like she would make clothes for me and we would go to the fabric store and look at fabrics and pattern books. And so I decided that I had to learn how to do that. So I would like buy patterns myself and try to sew them. And I started mixing all the patterns together using a sleeve from one and a body from another. And so, I understood how clothes were made because I felt it was essential to my becoming a fashion designer. And then it wasn't until I saw in my babysitter's magazine, there was an ad for Parsons School of Design, and it said, learn fashion design. And then I had read an article in Life magazine, which every household in America got at that point,
Right.
about two young ladies that went to Parsons School of Design. And when they graduated, they went to Paris, and Elizabeth Taylor opened a boutique for them.
Wow.
And so I thought, oh, that's the secret. I have to go to Parsons. But as a kid, you don't understand beyond that. You just think like that's what you have to do. And many years later, when I went back to reread the article, I didn't understand that one of the young ladies was Irving Penn's stepdaughter. So there were connections. And
Yes.
yeah, at least that's what got me to my dream. I did write to Parsons, got the registration catalog, and through my junior high school and high school years, I geared my whole education so that I would have what I needed to get into Parsons.
So was it art or was it all fashion?
Oh, you needed a certain grade point average. You had to provide self-portrait and a portfolio. And so I hadn't taken any art classes up until I got the registration catalog. So then I started taking art classes. I mean, not that I didn't know how to draw, because I always drew, but I never took any courses. So I started taking art classes and put together a portfolio. And then I think in my junior year in high school, I started applying to Parsons, and I got accepted, like, I think in the beginning of my senior year. And so I knew I was going there.
And were your parents always supportive?
No, I mean, not that they weren't supportive, but they just didn't understand, like, why don't you become a lawyer or a doctor, or, like, you have brains, like, why do you want to do dressmaking? But they supported me. I went to Parsons. I got a scholarship. My father moonlighted so that he could pay the tuition. It was a very expensive school. They really supported me with it.
And what would your classmates say about you now from growing up and from Parsons?
I'm still in touch with a lot of my grade school friends. Like, usually Christmas time we get together. They've seen me through all the incarnations, so I think that they're used to it. And then at Parsons, I wasn't like the top student. Like, there were like the teacher's pets that, got all the accolades, but I wasn't one of those. I was kind of like always in the background. I think that what the kind of fashion that I wanted to do was a little different than what Seventh Avenue fashion looked like. I didn't want to be a Calvin Klein or a Anne Klein, or like I wanted younger fashion, like boutique fashion. And I really followed, like, what was going on in London and Paris, with all the boutique designers like Ozzie Clark, Zandra Rhodes. And then also in Paris, all of a sudden there was Kenzo and Dorothy Beast, and that was my passion, was that kind of fashion, where Parsons was still, trying to create the next Geoffrey Beene or Calvin Klein, which, I love those clothes. And actually, my first job, I got a freelance job at Geoffrey Beene for sketching. That was my first job in the industry. It was fascinating to see the clothes, but it wasn't the kind of clothes I wanted to do. Like, I looked up to Norma Kamali and Betsy Johnson. And I moved from the dorm to the block where Norma Kamali had her boutique.
Wow.
And my roommate worked at Norma Kamali. And we've been friends since then. Like, I still stay in touch with Norma.
She's a good person to hang out with.
Oh, she's amazing. What an inspiration. But she always was like that.
Yeah.
I remember I had started working, and my first job, I didn't have Christmas off. And so she invited me over for Christmas and cooked a turkey dinner. And I mean, it was just like, she was just always been such a good friend.
Oh. After all of that focus and all of that effort to get to Parsons, you didn't end up staying the whole time.
I mean, imagine New York in the 70s. I mean, there was a lot going on. There was like a lot of nightlife. And I got to be friends with Steven Meisel. And we had like this little group, and we would go out every night. And in my second year, I realized that either I had to, like, really finish my junior portfolio, or I had to do something. But I overheard these students talking about a job, and it was somebody that I had read about in, there was a magazine called Rags, and it was kind of like a alternative fashion magazine. And a lot of very prominent fashion editors started there. And They talked about boutiques not only in New York, but San Francisco and Paris, and they talked about vintage fashion. And so it was really like cutting edge. And I remember reading about this designer, Erica Elias, and just loved her clothes and remembered seeing ads in the magazines. So I heard there was a job available there. So I ran up there with my portfolio and I got the job. So I didn't go back to Parsons. I started working.
And were your parents concerned?
I don't know. I think they were happy I got a job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it was right at the end of the school year. So it was through the summer. And then instead of going home, I was working.
And what did you learn from Erica about running a business?
Not that I really understood like everything about the business, but she was a very, very, very tough boss. You couldn't talk in the office. Like she didn't want chit chat going on. And she'd say, if you're talking, you're not working. And she let me do fabric research along with having my little design room. And whenever I would present fabrics to her, she'd say, "Oh, but you forgot about so-and-so company." And it was just like she wanted all the research should be very, very thorough. But, at that point, I didn't really understand, like you had to see who you could really work with as far as price point and also availability and minimums.
Right.
But you kind of learned it as you're going along. And then, but at the same time, I was working with pattern makers, making samples and submitting them. And there were four different divisions. So we would split the designs up into different divisions. So all that, again, I didn't quite grasp what was going on because I didn't really understand the business yet. And like all the clothes went to the showroom and sales happened. But then I had two more jobs after that, and then got more involved with not just working with the head person, but also working with the showroom.
In those places that you worked, did you like the designs, or was it very clear that you had something really different to say?
I liked the designs. I mean, it was, at the point it was called junior sportswear, so it was young. And some of them had dress divisions, so I would do dresses and sportswear. And but usually I didn't do the initial fabric selection. There was a team that did that, and there was a color theme that was chosen, and you had to design within that color theme. And one time I took a job at real traditional Seventh Avenue dress house, and I really didn't understand the fashion there. So I didn't last more than a month. Like I didn't make any hot numbers. So I got fired, but it was always like everything was a learning process.
Yeah.
And then my next job, I worked on clothes that were made in Asia, so I got to travel a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, so it everything was a great experience.
How did that segue into you making the first five pieces of your first collection?
During the punk rock period, some of my best friends, there was this couple, and they made really incredible jewelry out of vintage findings. And they used to sell it at the boutique show because all the boutiques would go to this boutique show to buy their things. So all the really cool stores across country were represented. I just said, "Oh, I wish I could do something like that." And they said, "Well, why don't you make some clothes and you can share our booth?" And they probably just wanted me to share the cost of the booth, but I ended up getting really good orders. And at that time, Macy's and Bloomingdale's were very fashion forward, and ended up getting windows. And then I got a New York Times ad, and I got called into the office of where I worked, and they told me I had to stop because I was on their payroll. And I said I can't stop because I have to ship my orders, and I got fired. So that's really how I started my own business.
Was it Anna Sui then?
No, I called it Simultané, which was inspired by Sonia Delaunay. Because Sonia Delaunay had a boutique called Simultané, and because I was working at the time, and I didn't know that if I could use my name or not, and so I think maybe one season, and then I switched to Anna Sui
And where were you selling?
at trade shows, and then back then you could also go up to like there were viewing days, and like I went up to Henri Bendel's and sold them some things, and again got another New York Times ad with Gusta Peterson photographing it, and And, then so like Fred Siegel, and then Barney's started their co-op department, and I started selling Barney's. So for 10 years, I was doing that sort of business. We did trade shows and we did showroom sales. I joined a showroom, and little by little, I built my business.
I know you're crossing paths. I mean, you had Steven, and then Marc Jacobs is around the same time. I mean, there was a group of a bunch of y'all that really started at the same time. Was that helpful? And did you meet with him and say, "How are you doing this?" Or how do I do this? Or did you just figure it out all out on your own?
Well, Stephen was beginning to do photography, and one of his first jobs, he called me and he said, "Can you come help me? And bring a bunch of your stuff, and let's just dress everybody up like we do when they come over your house." So I brought hats and scarves and different things, and we did a photos for Franca Sozzani.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, she was at Italian Glamour. So for about a year, we did like a monthly story for Franca Sozzani.
Wow.
And then she went to Italian Vogue, and she asked me to come to Italy to do some styling for her. And I was freelancing already in Italy because she got me a freelance job because she knew I needed money to keep my own collection going. So I did a few jobs for her, and then we went to Paris and I did a few jobs for her. And then she, of course she would have liked me to work for Italian Vogue, but I really wanted to stay designing. So I kind of didn't stick with the styling. Only once in a while with Steven, we would do special jobs or album covers or Italian Vogue stories.
Did you have employees at the time, or was it all just you?
I had a loft-like apartment, and so I started with one assistant, and then by the time I had, I think, four people working for me, I woke up one morning and the loft was filled with boxes and racks, and I thought, okay, I have to find an office. And so we all moved up to the garment center because we were going back and forth all day long anyway. And we started with like half a floor and then expanded that and then took another floor. And then eventually we kind of outgrew that space and then moved to another building where we had a whole floor, like a much bigger size. Yeah.
And all of the growth, I mean, it's all just learn as you go, just figure it out, make it up every
Oh yeah.
day. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, never a master plan.
I was gonna say, I understand that plan. And then, Anna, you didn't have your first fashion show until 10 years later. Why did it take so long, and what was that like?
Well, keep in mind the 80s were daunting because it was really power dressing. It was really Versace, Chanel. It was a different type time for fashion. There were like these really, really huge corporate companies that were dominating fashion at that point. And it wasn't until like in 1990, Linda Evangelista was going to couture, and she called me and she said, "Can I get some of those cute lace dresses that you make?" And so she brought a few of those with her to couture. And then I got phone calls from Paris from some of the other supermodels, and they were like, "Oh, I like Linda's dress. Can you send me one?" So I got to the point where they were all wanting to wear these little dresses, like the baby doll dresses. And I heard that Karl Lagerfeld got kind of upset and said, like, because he saw the label and all the dresses, like, Anna, who's this Anna?" And they, of course, they reported that back to me. The following year, Stephen was going to cover the collections in Paris and photograph Madonna for, I believe it was for Italian Vogue. And so he said, "Oh, you have to come to Paris with me." So we went to the shows together. And the first show, we stopped to pick up Madonna at the Ritz. And I remember like seeing her hotel room, and it was just filled with shopping bags and racks of clothes from every designer. And I was like, "Oh my God, everyone's just throwing their things at her so that she'll wear them."
And Anna, had you known her from the 70s in New York?
No. The first time I saw her was at the Roxy. And it's just right when she first signed with Seymour Stein. And she came walking through the room, and Steven said, "See that girl? She's going to be a big star." And she already had kind of that look.
Yeah.
And then she came out of her dressing room, and she had her coat on. We got rushed into the car because we were late already. Went to the Gaultier show. And when she sat down, she took off her coat and she said, "I have a surprise for you." And she was wearing my dress.
Oh,
So backstage after the show, there's those Herb Ritts pictures of her in my baby doll dress, and she's wearing all my jewelry because Steven said, "Madonna, take Anna's jewelry because you need something else." So I had all these like Kenneth J. Lane like cuffs and a big cross necklace, and she and a Chanel necklace, and she put them all on for the picture.
Oh my God. And you saying that makes so much sense because it does look so like you. Soon thereafter, you did your first fashion show for your own label.
Well, when we got back from Paris, then Stephen and my friend Paul Cavaco, who was at Vogue at the time, said, "Okay, now it's your turn. You have to do a show." And I was like, "How can I do a show? There's no way. I can't compete." But there were other little clues that things were changing because that summer, I was friends with Naomi and Linda and Christy just socially because Stephen would bring them over. We got to dinner, or and when I first met them, they were always like head to toe Versace or Chanel, like they would have fresh off the runway the whole outfit. And then that summer, Naomi was like, "Can you take me to the flea market? I want to get some of those like vintage lingerie tops." And all of a sudden, like I noticed other models dressing that way and wearing jeans and clogs. And there was one model making chokers. So everyone was kind of changing a little bit. And I thought, well, maybe this could be my time. Maybe it's changing enough that fashion's going to go my way. And those were the little signals that gave me like the confidence to do a show.
Was it everything that, I mean, were you thrilled? I mean, was it exactly how you wanted it to go?
I had no expectation. I didn't even think anybody was going to come. And again, at that point, it was like the right moment in New York fashion too, that every international press was here, that all the big editors were coming to the shows. I mean, there was, Polly Mellon and Carrie Donovan, Anna Wintour, like everyone. Like it was a real fashion community at that point, and not quite international yet, but there was international press coming because everyone was looking to New York for that energy that was going on here. And so I think that was like fortunate for me, that moment. And everyone was looking for younger designers and a new look, and especially Japan. And so I got courted by like a lot of Japanese companies at that point. And a lot of stores wanted my clothes in Japan, but I decided to go with Isetan because they were like the top department store there, and they would distribute my collection. And in addition to that, I got 12 licenses, and one of them was the cosmetics. So that was kind of like the best thing that could ever happen. And I also got approached by a German company to do fragrance, and that company was Wella.
Did you have a clear vision of what, of all those licenses, what each product would be? I mean, was it clear?
Since I was a kid, I saved folders of ideas for different things like that. So of course, that was the first thing I referred to, was like, what did I save? What were the products that I loved? But there was no master plan. It was just, I love design, and it's like, and I love product. So yeah, I'll do stockings. Yeah, I'll do, cosmetics. Oh, you want to do like special packaging? Sure, I'd love to. And this is my idea for the special packaging. It was around the same time when I opened my store. Like, I just had these ideas of what everything should look like. Like all the furniture that I bought had carved roses and had that Rococo look to them. But then we painted them black lacquer, so they all look like they match. They all look like a set. And then the red floors is because when I finally moved my business out of my apartment, Stephen and Paul were over, and they heard me on the phone with the contractor, and I was like, "Oh yeah, just like sand the floors and just make them blonde." And Stephen's like, "Wait, you can't have blonde floors. What color floors would Diana Vreeland have?" So I said, "Red," and he's like, "Okay, you need red floors," but I didn't know how you could do it. So I went to the paint store and started talking to the guys, and there was a new Swedish floor stain that came in red. So that's what we ended up doing in my apartment. And then we did the same thing in my boutique. We did red floors and lavender walls, and then all the black lacquer furniture, which also became like the signature for the fragrance and the cosmetics. So it all kind of gelled together.
everything that you ever put your fingers to has always gelled. It's so you. What was it like to have that store for, you had it almost 30 years?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, that was like my baby. And you could see like all, like everything was so personal. Like my brother came and we painted the walls and like we found all the furniture and he curated all the rock posters and, you know, we decorated it like it was my house, you know, and every weekend I would go to the flea market and I'd find another mirror or something to hang on the wall. So it really became very, very personal. And then like we designed the racks and so they had the same kind of Rococo look to them. And then when Japan signed the agreement with me, they also wanted to create boutiques. So we used the same formula and I would go to the flea market to find furniture for them. And then we gave them the paint color and where we made the racks and, you know, and so all the shops became very signature and looking exactly like my Soho boutique.
And going back to Detroit, I mean, were you always so clear about everything that you believed and everything that you thought was beautiful?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
Because I don't know that there's a designer with a more signature style than you, all encompassing 100%.
I have to admit, like Biba, I think.
Yeah, Biba.
Yeah. And of course, I knew about Biba and I never went to Biba, but Bergdorf's had a shop. And one summer we were visiting in New York and I had read about the shop and we went up there. And I mean, that was just mind blowing. And actually, there's an exhibition at the same museum that had my exhibition that's opening on Thursday.
Yes.
And I'm going there.
Oh.
The opening. Yeah.
It's so funny how many of these conversations I've had with people that people mentioned Biba being just like everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Barbara is just so amazing and her whole design concept. And I mean, if you think about it, she really pioneered designer lifestyle.
Absolutely. Yeah. She was doing snacks.
It's like, and men's and yeah. Furniture and cosmetics. And
yeah. You've been doing this 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the most challenging part of having a business through, you survived 9/11, recession of 2008, COVID? What's been the most challenging period?
It's always money. But I've been so lucky with these licenses because I think that's really what carried me through.
You're one of the only real independent designers. You always have been. Did you recognize that that was something that was a North Star for you? Because I'm sure people have offered to invest.
Not really. I mean, I never, there was never a master plan.
Yeah.
I think my work ethic and having to like do a new collection every 4 months. And, you know, it's just that drive that I never stopped to look back, really. It was just like, okay, I've got to do this and I've got to do this. I've got to prepare this and, you know, have to ship this. And you know, it was just yeah. Always like that work ethic.
Was there ever a minute where you, or a moment that you knew that your business was a real business that had longevity?
No, not really. I guess maybe the defining moment was when we did the museum exhibition.
Yeah.
Because we had never even looked at the clothes again. You know, we'd box them up after the season was over and put them in this closet that I had in my office. And so when we had to pull out everything, it was like, oh my God, there's so much. There were so many collections. And then seeing it all on display, I think I remember my assistant Thomas had gone ahead to London to help them set up the exhibition, and he called me crying and he said, Anna, you can't believe this.
Oh, well, I felt that way when I saw it. I mean, I think that one, I wanted every single piece. You have such a, it is so your collection. Nobody else could have done any bit of it. I mean, I think it's extraordinary. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that. What was it like to see your body of work in a museum for the first time?
Yeah, it was mind blowing. Some of the things I had not seen since the fashion show. You know, one of the things in the show, we celebrated everyone that kind of became my work family. And, you know, I worked with a lot of the same people. I still do, for the hair, the makeup, the sweaters and accessories and jewelry and I had a license for the shoes and bags, and so all those a lot of those people came to the opening.
Yeah.
If they didn't make it to London, then they came to the New York one.
There's a great quote from Stephen that says, "You see Anna's life when you see her clothing." Do you find that your life still continues to influence your work?
Oh, completely, completely. Like even up until this recent collection, I hadn't got COVID until January, and I had to stay home for 10 days. And I thought it was going to go crazy because I don't think I've ever stayed home for 10 days. And so I watched like every Agatha Christie that I could find on Acorn and BBC and, and then I thought, oh yeah, I can use this for a collection. And so that's really, it's again from real life into like what my fantasy of that period of time in British and British countryside.
Yeah.
So that's where all the colors came from. And yeah.
Speaking of Stephen, will you describe your longstanding friendship with him and what it's meant to
I mean, just from the second I saw him, I thought he was like the most beautiful man I had ever
you?
seen. And then when he asked me to come hang out with him and his group, that was like a huge privilege. And I think that he's been such a huge influence on not only like fashion, but life in general. And we kind of like came up through it together. And and I think I was just so proud of his exhibition that they had in Spain
Yeah.
of like 1993, which is was his favorite year of work. And it was again astounding to see how much work he did in 1 year, how many faces he discovered,
Yeah.
and then plus like his whole body of work with Linda Evangelista. Like she was kind of the star of the show, but then he did like the book for her too, right after that. So I think it's just you can just see his command of his vision and his discoveries, his style. There was always, again, a real consistency with like how he photographed and selected people, not just based on being pretty. There was a lot of style behind each person. He's been such an incredible friend.
Yeah. Do you have family members that work with you? Speaking of it being a close-knit group.
Yeah, through the years, my brother Bobby worked here for about almost 10 years, helping me with a lot of the licensing and contracts and things. Isabel worked here for about 2 years during the COVID period, and she came on as my assistant because sadly my longtime assistant Thomas passed away right before COVID.
I'm sorry.
And so she came and started as an assistant, but almost like took over everything. Like she was just organized and, got involved with sales, got involved with like taking over our e-commerce and really like turning that into a real business. I mean, she's just so gifted that way, like so organized. And Jeannie came and worked with us for like a lot of the e-commerce, and but she wants to be a film director, and she does some of our visuals, like photography. And we just shot some videos and photographs from this last collection. Chase has modeled a lot for us, but she's becoming a very well-known actress now. So it's really nice to see these everybody with their own visions of what they want to become.
You have such a signature style, and you're so recognizable all over the world. Has it ever been hard to be in the public eye as a designer?
I don't know, because I think the work always was more important to me. That's I was just happy to be able to design and do my work. And I was so lucky to have those contracts and to have people respect the work. It was never about fame or anything. It was more that I could create.
Yeah. What are you most proud of in your career so far?
I guess the fact that I can still do what I love. I mean, like nobody could ask for more. I didn't have the weight of a boss over my head all these years,
Yeah.
and I'm still able to create what I love and put what I love into my work. And I think that, again, you can't ask for more. It's like I don't I it there was never like, I want to buy a house in Beverly Hills or, a country house. That wasn't my style. I wanted to do my work. And I think, like COVID was really eye-opening about that, like, oh, maybe our world is not going to be the same anymore. And it actually isn't.
Yeah.
But I think that we had to find another way. And, with
I was
e-commerce
going to say it must
and
have hurt to close that store.
it did. I mean, it really, like, I just loved that store so much.
We ask everybody on the podcast what they wore to prom.
I didn't go to prom. I went to a rock concert.
Want to hear a great outfit that you wore in Detroit, actually.
I did go to a junior prom, and I made my own dress, matching shoes and stockings, and but then I then when I discovered Biba and fashion and all that, I remember I went to the fabric store and I bought houndstooth, and I made a jumper that was actually similar to something that I've done in my collection. It was very low, scooped here, up here, and ankle length. And it was black and white houndstooth. And then I wore a black shirt underneath it with big billowy sleeves and a purple feather
You
boa.
had to have purple in there.
And I wore it to the basketball game, thinking I was just the
Cat's
latest
meow.
name off the streets in London. And I think everybody was like, whoa, what happened to her?
Thank you. This was such a treat for me, and I appreciate you taking the time so very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.